Blog Talk Radio.
Checker, swinging sword lecture, closing down the sector, supreme neck protector, better want him kid, Mr. Mester, foreman pop, about to blow his lid from the pressure, too hot for TV, for cheesy, too many want to be hard, be easy, it's all in together, going on, not together, it don't take much to please me.
Yeah, we back at it, another edition of Shaking It Up Sports Show. I'm your host, Cordell Woodland, here with Ryan Queef. And we're ready to go into another week of NFL football, another week of fantasy, another week of redemption. You know what I'm saying? This is redemption.
You're
going to
be coming
right
in here for
here.
Redemption every week. I have a feeling.
Hey, so be it. Until things change, then I'm used to this. This is the way it's been for years. We're just always on to the next week. Last week, we're always trying to get that out of our minds as quick as possible. All us 0-2 teams out there, we're hoping and praying that this is the week that we get our first win. But
you sound like a bad quarterback that just threw 4 interceptions and has to go back out there on the field from his hometown. That's what you sound like right now.
Look, you know, I'm just being a realist right now. My team stinks. My team's front office, my team's coaching staff has been the reason. I'm trying to be as optimistic as I possibly can, honestly. I'm trying to be as optimistic as I can. I have no expectations. I'm just hoping to just look better than I did the week before. That's all I want. That's all I ask. Please. But we're going to start off on a more of a serious note with everything that's been going on. I mean, it's been going on forever, but in the news, at least, the protest towards all the police brutality, you know, the recent shooting in Tulsa, and who the cop, by the way, has just recently, I just got a report that the officer has been charged with first-degree manslaughter in the death of Terrence Crutcher out in Tulsa. And we also know about the shootings going on in North Carolina as well. And ever since the start of the season, we've seen Colin Kaepernick get it going with the taking a knee or taking a seat during the national anthem, and every week more and more players are catching on, more people are starting to talk about it, and really with the recent shootings that's going on top of everything else that's been going on the past 100-plus years, it's now giving us more of a reason to talk about it now. And it's good to see that we're getting further and further away from the whole, oh, they're not standing for the national anthem. And now, because of guys like Richard Sherman and everybody coming out and speaking about it, and like I said, the most recent incident, people are starting to finally talk about the issues at hand.
I mean, it sounds like we've beaten a dead horse because, you know, I mean, this is the third, fourth time I think we've talked about this or whatever. But, I mean, the reason why the relevancy of the conversation is coming up is because of the most related event. You know, we see the videos and we see the riots and, you know, the protests and all this other stuff and more players get involved. But this is the first thing that's happened since he took his initial seat or his initial kneel, whatever you want to call it. And it just goes back to what he's trying to raise awareness for. And the scary part about it to me is, you know, he's the least liked player in the NFL as of a vote by ESPN, but he's the number one selling jersey. So it's like people are afraid to like him, speak vocally how much they hate him, focusing on the player and the man instead of the message that he's trying to raise. And then now, since this most recent event, you have guys like Richard Sherman come out saying what he said. You got guys like Marshawn Lynch, beast mode, retired, says, you know, I'd rather Colin Kaepernick kneel than have to put his hands up and almost get shot. You know, even Jerry Rice, you know, the greatest, in my opinion, the greatest football player of all time, he's going to have some records that will never be broken. He first came out and he said he didn't like what Colin was doing, you know, stand up, you know, do this, do that. But then after this week's events, you know, whether they be just or unjust, regardless of that, he's saying, you know what, maybe what Colin was doing or the message he was trying to send was right. So you have people changing their mind left and right, and it's showing in so many different ways, and it's just, it's crazy,
but
like, the timing of all this.
The thing is, to me, I don't understand, and the reason that people, I don't think really people are changing their minds. I think people are just now starting to understand what this is all about. Because before, like I said, it was overshadowed with the whole not standing for the national anthem. And it was the actual point, the actual reason that he wasn't standing for the national anthem was getting overshadowed and people weren't really seeing it. But now with the recent shootings and everything, and with people like Richard Sherman coming out and actually taking over his press conference and actually talking about it and speaking, and you know the way he talks so intellectual. And he has a good way of getting.
Well, he's a Stanford grad. He's a smart dude. He ain't just out there playing football.
Of course, he's got to get that money's worth, and this shows that it did. But I honestly, to me, as far as the people speaking out about it, I feel like the biggest influence was that I said this when we initially started talking about it, was that we needed to see some white people in the sports industry talk about it, some white athletes talk about it, and we recently seen that that's been happening. Kyle Long has come out in support of Colin Kaepernick, saying that he may not necessarily not stand for the national anthem, but he spoke on what's going on, the oppression that black people having to deal with in this country, the all the police brutality incidents that are occurring, the things that are wrong with this country that everybody was trying to just wash over, sweep under the rug, which is what they've been doing for decades and decades. This is the usual American way. But Steve Kerr also steps out and talks about it. He also mentions how black people are receiving major injustice with all the police shootings and everything, police brutality, and just the oppression in the black communities, everything that's wrong with this country right now, honestly. So it was good to see that people of a different color, of the majority color, step out and actually say something about it. And I want to say one more thing. I know Cam Newton has come out and talked about it too, and he's been receiving a lot of scrutiny from a lot of black analysts that I've been watching, at least today, who have a problem with the fact that he is saying that he wants to hold everybody accountable. And with black people, it's like you have to pick a side. You have to pick a side with black people. It's like you either all in with us or you're not. It can't be no, you know, you want to say, give a little bit of, you know, yeah, we're being treated wrong, but at the same time, we can't be hypocrites, is what Cam said. Everybody has to be held accountable. And honestly, I completely agree with him. I've been saying it from the beginning.
He's 100% correct.
I go to Morgan State, and we've been dealing with some things lately. Morgan State has had two tragic deaths within the last 48 hours here, one being because of a stabbing a kid. Somebody that goes to Morgan State was walking home at night by himself, but somebody just runs up and stabs him and stabs him to death. And these are things that go on in the black communities every day. So we can't, as a black people, sit here and ignore the things that are going on right outside our front doors. We can't sit here and continue to act like the only thing that white people are. And I'm not saying that we're not being oppressed. I completely understand it. I'm with it all the way. Don't ever get that twisted. I'm with it all the way. But at the same time, I understand that we have problems in-house that need to be fixed, that need to be started with us.
I think more or less what Cam was saying is, you know, yes, there's some racial inequalities from whites to blacks, and it's holding us back or it's making our lives more difficult, yada, yada, yada. But what he also said was one of the biggest things holding us back is ourselves. The black community is holding the black community back. You know, you have all this crime, you know, in-house. You know, you have kids without fathers because fathers are killing each other and that kind of thing. You have, you know, these small pockets of communities that are just holding each other back. And that's where, like, it's not about, like, racial like rights as far as, you know, this team A or this team B. It's about individual rights and just treating each other as individuals. Don't see the man as a man instead of seeing him as a black man or a white man. And I think that's part of the problem of, like, why this has been such a fuss at this point, is because you either have to be on this side or this side. There's this imaginary line drawn in the sand, and if you're on one side, you have no choice but to hate the other side or vice versa. And you have more people coming out that are in the middle of the road talking about, you know, I'm not for or against this. I'm not saying this is right. I'm not saying this is wrong. But what they're trying to do is get people to think about it as a whole, starting with themselves. And that's kind of where – that's the only solution at this point. We can't just point the fingers at white versus black or black versus white. It's just man versus man and trying to create this fair playground for everyone to get involved. And when Cam said, you know, blacks are holding themselves back, it's just like, oh, how dare you? Like, what do you mean we're holding ourselves back? You know, blah, 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 blah. Well, you got to take that with a grain of salt. You know, every little community, you know, people, you know, in America, they think Muslims are the worst things in the world, where Muslims really are the worst things in the world, but there's a couple radical Muslims that have ruined it for everybody. You know, it's that same kind of concept that people got to start to grasp on. You know, there's a bad apple in every group, and you have to start acknowledging that, you know, you might not be a part of the best part about it, and you got to start changing with yourself. And when
exactly.
Cam said that,
like,
it pissed some people off.
The first step is admit it. I feel like we have to look in the mirror, and we have to understand that there are things about ourselves within our own communities that need to be fixed. Yes, the police situations are big time. Yes, the government situations against black people is a problem. Yes, the justice system against black people is a major problem. All of those are problems. But the thing that I think white people as a whole have is unity that we tend to not have until things go wrong. And I think that needs to change. And we got a caller in that wants to give his take real quick on it. Bryce from Brooklyn. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you doing?
What's
So here's the problem with what Cam said. And it's a big problem because it's a redirect, quite frankly, I believe, from people who we're trying not to offend people, but that time is way, way past. It's like talking about the state killing black folks and getting away with it versus so-called black crime makes no sense. It's almost like talking about unicorns. It doesn't exist. There is no such thing as black on black crime. As a matter of fact, black on black crime is a narrative perpetrated by neo-Nazis because they believe black people are inherent animals and more violent than everyone else. So the pathology fits in with racist ideology about black people in general. We don't talk about white on white crime or Mexican on Mexican crime or women on women crime. We talk about black on black crime because we've been pathologized, because people generally walk around thinking we're just more violent. So therefore, when we get shot by the cops for doing whatever, at the end of the day, we just deserved it. So I wish Stephen A. Smith or Cam would just give it the rest and stop talking about things that don't exist. Let's talk about things that really do exist, like the state killing black folks unarmed and doing it and getting away with it over and over again, white supremacy that creates the situation where years ago a guy like Rodney King could be caught on video getting beat, and it's like, no, we're going to set precedent that you're not going to even use videotape to curtail us. We curtail you. That's what we're here for. So that's just continually being perpetuated. To focus on something that has nothing to do with the state killing us and has no bearing in facts or reality, just a made-up thing, just as a redirect from a lot of people that, quite frankly, have some issue with blackness or black people and don't want them asserting their own personhood.
Right. And I thanks for the call again, Bryce. I completely understand what you're saying. That goes back to what I said before, that I believe as us, just the black people as a whole, the common perception is from us is either you're with it or you're not. You're either all the way in or you're not. And I think really in Cam's situation, this is not a situation that Cam really wanted to get into. And I think we've seen this before. The media really put him into this. I don't think it was a situation like the Kaepernick situation or the Sherman situation or the Jeremy Lane situation where they come out and willingly decided to talk about it. Cam really wanted to stay away from this because for the fact that I think he knew that his view on the situation would be taken the way it's being taken right now. He didn't really want to get put in the middle of it. So the best thing he probably could do would just say that everybody needs to be held accountable, which he's right. Everybody does.
There's
nothing wrong with saying that, but I think the fact that he's saying that black on black crime and stuff is a problem, and that we need to fix that aspect is a problem that shouldn't really be, because he's telling the truth. We need to hear that about ourselves, that we have situations within ourselves that we need to fix amongst each other. There's nothing wrong with admitting that. We're not completely perfect in this situation when it comes to us.
What you were saying where, you know, Cam kind of feels like he was put on the spot by the media or whatever, I think that's part of the issue that's going on with it right now is people that wouldn't normally be talking about this kind of stuff are talking about it. So it takes that, you know, you got to rip that Band-Aid off. It's that uncomfortable conversation that people are having, but now that they're having, they're actually putting it to conscious thought. It's a conscious plan.
And I have no problem with it being uncomfortable, because people need to be uncomfortable. This is a time where everybody needs to be uncomfortable. That's
well,
because talking about this stuff is going to make it that way.
And to go to the point, like, you know, ESPN released those polls yesterday about Cap being the least, you know, popular player in the NFL. You know, you never change the world, or you never revolutionize something by making friends. And, you know, if he's going to be that sacrificial lamb and stick his neck out there and lose his endorsements and all this other stuff, I mean, he's been willing to do so. And the trickle-down effect of it is you have these other people doing it, and, you know, they're sacrificing as well. So I'm not, you know, calling these people martyrs or whatever, but, you know, them making this uncomfortable topic a kind of mainstream topic is, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think it's working. Maybe in baby steps, but it's working.
It is.
And, you know,
and like
they're willing to put their neck out there. I mean, who's the Brandon Marshall, the middle linebacker for the Broncos? Week one, first game of the NFL season, he takes that knee and he drops two or three endorsement deals in less than a week.
Yep.
I mean, what is that? Where does that go to show you? I mean, it's uncomfortable. People don't know how to do it, so they pull out, they retreat, they get that little turtleneck, they crawl into their little shell. And, you know, if you get a guy like Cam, you know, MVP, Super Bowl, everyone knows who Cam Newton is, yada, yada, yada. And he's out there talking about it, and he says some stuff like, you know, we need to look at ourselves. We're all going to be held accountable. That's something he wouldn't have said a year ago if Cap would have taken that knee. So kudos. Like, seriously, like, it's starting to work a little bit.
I mean, I agree. The fact that we're talking about it is the good part. That's the good part is we, everybody knows the problem, but like I said, this country has a habit of sweeping things like this under the rug and just trying to keep quiet, which is why I think everybody of the public perception, at least in the media and everything, made it think so bad that Kaepernick used the platform that he has to do this, because it's just too loud. It was going to catch too much attention. They just didn't want it to be this much, because now they have no choice but to talk about it. Now it's huge.
Right.
It spreads. It's like a disease. It's going to spread over into all the sports. It's already spread into soccer. We're going to definitely see it spread into the NBA. Baseball, you don't know, because like Adam Jones said, it is a predominantly white sport, so we don't know about baseball, but it's going to spread and it's going to stick. So we might as well get used to it. And the police don't seem like they're about to be stopping what they're doing anytime soon, no matter how many times they get caught on camera, no matter how many times we sit here and go through this as a nation. Just it's like it's never enough death. It's never enough. So they're not going to stop. So this conversation just seems like it'll be ongoing, and it's good. Hopefully we continue to move in the right direction, because I'm tired of looking at a different news report, a different video every other day on Facebook of somebody unarmed being shot in the streets in cold blood. I'm just honestly tired of that. I can't get used to seeing that. And it's sickening to say that it's becoming a part of the norm now. It's no longer a surprise. It's no longer a surprise.
Well, that's
but,
the media
you know,
and the culture. You can't hide anything anymore. Everything's on Twitter within the first couple of minutes.
Right.
So
right.
It's not the reason. It's things that always been there, but now it's just covered and talked about different ways. People swing it for their own personal and political agendas. It's just now it's thrown in your face. You can't even sit down, you know, at lunch and get on your phone without
good.
Seeing some meme or some link and stuff
that's
like that.
That's one good thing about
but
that I do very
the
much
tricky
like
thing
about
is, though,
social
is you gotta sift through the BS. There's a lot of BS out there, and people just run with it. And, you know, the scariest thing to me is a culture of people that don't know, that aren't educated, thinking that something is the way it is when it's purely based off of Twitter or Facebook. That scares the living hell out of me.
Of course. How many times have we seen Twitter kill somebody? You know what I'm saying? We've seen that multiple times. Twitter just put a death up there. Twitter's a joke, so you definitely got to sort through the trash to find the gold. But let's talk some sports for once. I mean, I know we started off the show a little dark, but let's talk some sports. There is football tonight on a good note. We got the Patriots going against Houston tonight. We are seeing the rookie. What is this kid's name?
Jacoby Brissett.
With Dyser Brissett from Florida and South Carolina. North Carolina State. He also played in North Carolina State from Florida, North Carolina. Now, I didn't really get to watch a lot of him in college, but he's in for a huge test tonight, going up against a very good Texas defense. You got J.J. Watt on the other end, and a resurrection in Jadeveon Clowney, who's looking pretty good. This is a
finally healthy.
Very huge test. Yeah, finally healthy. I'm happy for him. And this is a huge test for a rookie, let alone a rookie, but a first-time starter. Your first game is against Houston. What are you giving the Patriots? Who are you picking tonight?
I'm picking the Patriots. I don't care if you're a third-string, 10th-string, or, like, you literally just got called up to come play quarterback for the Patriots out of the grocery store. Like, Bill's going to have something for him. Like, if you're a rookie quarterback and you have to get thrown in there on short notice because of injury or whatever – who do you want to be your coach? Like, I mean, literally, he's
right.
Got the best case scenario. And
you know
Bill
what?
Belichick,
the best thing is you're not even expecting this guy to really – I mean, at least I'm not. I don't expect him to go out there and really look like a rookie. I feel like Belichick is going to put together a game plan that's going to make him look like he's been in the league for years.
And you can tell, too, because, you know, I checked about an hour ago and Vegas had the line for this game as the Patriots giving up one at home. Okay, so you have undefeated Patriots, you have the undefeated Texans. I don't think the Patriots have been a home underdog, I don't even know, this century. So, I mean, even Vegas is like, you know what, Belichick's going to find a way. Like, even as good as the Texans have looked, Belichick is going to find a way. And, I mean, He's made Garoppolo look good. We didn't really think he was going to look bad. I don't think he's going to make Brissett look like a star, but he's going to turn around and hand the ball off to LeGarrette Blount 25 times. He's going to rely on that defense. Belichick, he'll make a game plan just to get through those first couple weeks, even this. And then he gets his toy back, Tom Brady. You get Gronk back. Hell, I want to see Julian Edelman play quarterback tonight. That's what I want.
We all do. We all do.
I mean,
everybody's
QB
for that one play.
I just traded for him today in fantasy, in my keeper league or my league of record, whatever you want to call it. I just traded for him. And, you know,
wow.
It looks like a horrible matchup. I gave up Isaiah Crowell, who's outperformed. Trust me, I'm doing all right. Oh, and your
that's
boy Deshaun
it?
Jackson. And Deshaun Jackson, that's
oh.
right.
Okay, yeah,
but,
I mean,
you know,
that's still a good deal. That's still a good trade.
I'm half a mind to put Edelman in my flex with a third-string quarterback, you know, for that reason. But it's just, you know, we're sitting here talking about the Patriots, but the Texans are a good squad.
Osweiler's
looks
that.
Good.
And yeah.
Lamar Miller, you know what? I'm happy for Lamar Miller. Like, you know, he came in, I think he was a second-round draft pick. He was high enough for the Dolphins. He's getting 12, 15 carries a game. They're not using them. They're just completely ignoring him. He's averaged 5-6 yards per carry while he's there. Come contract time, they're just like, don't even acknowledge him. And he said,
right.
I want to go to a team that's going to give me the rock. And through two games, I think he's got 50-plus carries, second most carries in the league. And he's out there carrying the rock. And they're giving him the ball. So I'm happy for that dude. Like, and you got guys like Will Fuller showing out. Hopkins, who is just a mule, like, and that defense, like, it's going to be a good game. I wish we could see both teams at full strength. But, you know, you get what you get.
Well, I'm expecting a very good game tonight as well. I want to see how much of Belichick's magic really influences this game. We know that the Patriots are basically at their best when they're dictating how the game's going, when they're able to really run the ball and, like you said, I could see the rookie just turn around, hand the ball off to LeGarrette Blount 25 to 30 times tonight alone. I want to see how Edelman's thrown in. I've seen reports that there's a very extremely high chance that we will see him at quarterback at some point tonight. So I'm anxious to see what the Patriots have up their sleeve, because it's definitely going to be pure coaching to get them through this game. The defense that they're facing is extremely tough. Like I said, you got the front line up there with led by J.J. Watt. You got Kevin Johnson in the secondary. I really like where the Houston team is going. And I'm anxious to see how good Brock Osweiler is tonight. He got a huge payday. There's a lot of expectations on his shoulders. He's got DeAndre, and he's going up against a very tough defense. And on the road in New England, it's never tough. Never tough. It's prime time. I don't care if Tom Brady's back there or not. It's never easy going into New England. So I'm anxious to see how Brock Osweiler looks tonight, if he's really going to look like the real deal, or if he'll look like the Brock that, you know, that's just a little, yeah, he's good, but, you know, he's not nothing to really rave about, which is what I think about him as of now. But he did beat New England last year, and with another good defense. I mean, his defense now that he has isn't the Broncos' defense, but, you know, it's not a bad replacement at all. And God knows his receiver is, I mean, he's definitely in a more, I think, a better offense now with, like you said, Lamar Miller in the backfield. I really want to see what this offense does. This is a very potent offense and has the potential to be very explosive, but they're facing a dangerous defense. So I'm anxious to see who gets it. But as far as my pick, I say all that to say I'm going to go with the Texans tonight, honestly, for the steal. I'm going to take the Texans with the steal tonight.
I don't think that's a bad pick. I really don't. I mean, I'm not Bill O'Brien. I think he's a great coach, and I think Osweiler, like, you know, during the preseason and part of, like, you know, his run in Denver last year, he looked like check down Charlie, and that, like, perplexed people because, you know, he's 6'6", huge arm, blah blah blah, but he's actually come out there, he's slung the rock and he's slung it on target. He's been highly efficient. And, you know, with the way that they're running the ball, well, at least the way they're paying attention to the run, I actually read earlier today, you know, it sucks for Lamar Miller. Right now, the Texans offensive line is ranked like 30 or 31 in running efficiency. So, you know, every yard that Lamar Miller's getting right now is on his own merit, on his own talent for the most part. So I hope they figure that out. But it's going to be a good game. I wish it was kind of like, you know, it's good that it's a prime time, but I wish it was on Sunday. And I wish it was later in the season so we could see both teams at full strength, you know, with Gronk, with Tom, because these are two teams that people think are serious AFC contenders. I mean, these are both the division winners, I believe. You have the Texans out of the AFC South, and you have the Patriots out of the AFC East.
Right.
So you'd want to see it later on in the year when teams, you know,
potential
5-1.
Potential playoff matchup.
No.
Definitely a potential playoff matchup that we're looking at. But there's another football game on tonight. And we're going into the college world. We get to see Deshaun Watson go against Georgia Tech, two undefeated teams, and number five Clemson going into Georgia Tech. I think this is a tough game for Georgia Tech, but I'm anxious to see how Deshaun Watson looks tonight. I want him to, because it's been overshadowed by Lamar Jackson really this season. Completely going into this year, everybody expected Deshaun Watson to be the number one overall pick on into the draft and be pretty much look like the best college player in the nation. And he's been overshadowed by Lamar Jackson. And I want to see what kind of competitor Deshaun Watson is tonight, because this is going to be a grittier game than I think a lot of people are expecting. And I want to see him take it personal that everybody is talking more about Lamar Jackson than him. I want to see, and it really is, I'm not saying it's not rightfully so, because it should be. He's been outplayed, and Deshaun Watson hasn't looked like the Deshaun Watson of last year. But with him coming into the year, But he came, like I said, he came into the season with the label of the best quarterback in the nation. And this is as good a time for real for me, at least, to see it. I want to see it on the road, on prime time in Georgia Tech. I want to see it tonight. I want to see a dominant Clemson Tigers performance that we haven't seen yet this year.
Don't get your hopes up, and I'll tell you why. Georgia Tech plays a very unique style of ball.
Oh,
I mean, they've they've got that wishbone, I'm going to lull you to sleep, throw 15 passes, you know, dual threat quarterback. And it always blows my mind because, you know, a team that runs like this, you know, the wide receivers they've produced in, like, the last 15 years.
And that's
Megatron, Demaryius Thomas,
yeah.
You know, like,
and
there's a couple others too I'm forgetting. And, I mean, you would think that, like, those premier, like, NFL wide receivers would come from a school where they were getting 300 targets a season, where these dudes are getting, like, 40 receptions. And that's leading the league. But the reason why you won't see Deshaun light it up is because, you know, Georgia Tech's going to slow that game down. They're going to keep it out of Deshaun's hands. And even if it is in Deshaun Watson's hands right now, he hasn't looked good with the ball in his hands. He's completing, like, barely over 50%. I think he's got 7 touchdowns, 3 picks. He's played horrible on third down and blitz situation. Like, Clemson is a good team. I watch a lot of ACC football. That's my conference. That's where my team resides. And so, I mean, I get to see these guys a lot. And, you know, his receivers have let him down. His offensive line has let him down. They lost a lot in the draft, and they're not a team that reloads. Granted, they are loaded and they are good, but it's just, I don't know if it's the weight or the pressure on his shoulders, but, you know, we saw him come up in the championship game against Alabama, and they came up just short, but he looked so damn good against what we hail to be the greatest college football team. I mean, they have been the last 10 years, four championships. So when you can do that against Bama in front of everyone watching, the biggest stage in college football, you know, it's kind of upsetting to see, you know, week two against the Scrubs go for 200 yards of 2 touchdowns and a pick. That's not a Heisman hopeful. That's not a, you know, quarterback stud of the future in the NFL. And I want to see him do well because last Mel Kiper mock draft, I know it's early, that's when I saw, you know, they had Niners top 2, top 3 pick, and they had Deshaun Watson up there. So, you know, if we do go a quarterback route in San Francisco and it is Deshaun Watson, I want to see the kids show out in college. And he needs to hold up because when it comes playoff time and they look at these games, there's going to be some teams up there that have won losses or undefeated. And Clemson really doesn't have a case for themselves right now. And they just keep falling
right
backwards.
But the good thing that they have is they've been good enough. And what we've seen so far this year in college football is the fact that top teams have been dropping. Nobody has really looked that great, honestly, within the first couple of weeks of the season. Nobody has really looked that great. So they have that going for them. It is still early in the season.
It's good to lose early in college football.
Definitely better to lose early. But we've got teams like Notre Dame who's already lost twice, you know. So the fact that they have no losses as of now, that go on for them. And I get the fact that Georgia Tech, I know they're a gritty team. They'll sit there and they'll run that wishbone down your throat all game long.
Hey, that's a tough game, prime time in
defense.
Atlanta.
It is. But if this Clemson
this is
team
their Super
expects
Bowl.
To get to if they expect to get beyond where they went last year, which is just get into the championship game and losing, this is the type of game that they need to make a statement in. This is the type of game that you need to break away from the pack, because right now they're – I mean, even Alabama looked normal last week, you know. So
Ole Miss has got their number every time.
Yeah, but I mean, but this is still the same case, though. It's still the same case. It's like everybody's in a pack together right now. Clemson needs to come out and be that team to really shoot out, because it's looking right now, it's looking like it's Louisville and the field, almost. It's almost to that point now.
I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, come on now.
You can't underestimate the fact that
they went into Florida State and completely destroyed.
It wasn't at Florida State. It was at Louisville. You still got to realize Louisville still has to play Houston and Clemson.
But it doesn't matter, though. So, Florida State got beat on, like, 62-20. Like, come on.
That's fine.
I don't care where you're at.
You're going to crown Louisville like that? It's still early, and they still have 2 brutal games left.
Just because of the fancy sugar-coated ESPN,
Lamar Jackson.
I'm licking my chops for that Clemson game.
That's going to be one of the more entertaining and appealing games.
You got
2 of the highlighted quarterbacks. I think
I
want to
see both these teams looking good. And right now, Louisville is a high-speed freight train running through everybody right now. Clemson needs to pick up the pace, or they're going to get ran over. And tonight is a good start. Tonight is a good start.
It won't be tonight. Georgia Tech is not that type of team that you do that on.
It has to be tonight. It needs to be tonight. They play Louisville in 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks or so?
Two or three weeks.
Yeah, that, I mean, now's the time. Now's the time. They've already got a head start. You got to come out firing right now, and that statement needs to be made by your best player, your Heisman hopeful, and your future possible number one pick. That's what needs to be right there.
October 1st is when they play.
So that's two weeks from now. It's time to get into the next Saturday. Oh yeah, that is next Saturday. You're right. Oh yeah, even more reason. Tonight is the night, and I think Clemson knows that. You can't go in there sleepwalking, and you can't go
if anything makes this more of a trap game. This is a huge trap game. And that's why
I don't think they'll overlook it. But we're gonna shift pace a little bit, and we're gonna go into our own no huddle situation. 1 minute per topic, 30 seconds each. We're gonna give our own personal take on it, and we're gonna start off in cheese land. Aaron Rodgers, in his latest interview, was basically coming out saying that he doesn't care about what all the media has to say about how bad the offense looks, how bad he's looked right now. Do you think Aaron Rodgers needed to come out and defend himself?
It's put like this. Aaron Rodgers is that offense. Last year, Aaron Rodgers accounted for, like, I don't even know the percentage, but I think he was the leading rusher for the team. Obviously, he's the quarterback. That team, and we said this on Tuesday, you know how I feel. That team is not good right now, and they are looking so discombobulated. It's ridiculous. And people are used to the Packers being that team, so he's got to defend it because they're going to get attacked, and they're going to get people's best games, and they're going to get picked apart and analyzed more than any other team. So I don't have a problem with them doing it. It's just that team's just not good right now, and he sees that.
I mean, I don't really have a problem with him coming out and defending himself because, honestly, me personally, I feel like people in the media and just the fans in general do sometimes just need to be told to shut up. But And this is what I would have said on Tuesday. Relax. It's the early season. We've seen them go through these slumps before. Jordy's just getting back. They're still the Packers. With all the injuries going on in Minnesota right now, who to me was really their only competition in the division, I'm not worried about the Packers right now. You have time on your hands to really, you know, get your offense back in rhythm. So, honestly, I'm not worried about it. Was on Bill Simmons' show recently, and he was asked by Bill Simmons about the what does he think about the general perception of people coming out and saying that they think KD is weak for going to the Warriors. And KD basically did Aaron Rodgers and defended himself, saying that he's not weak. If he's in the elite category in the NBA, he's not weak for getting to reach the things that he has accomplished in the league already. Do you think KD needed to defend himself?
As far as being weak, he's going to be viewed that way from day one. He came into the rookie combine, you know, measuring at 6'11", like 195 pounds. His bench press, I think, was 95 pounds or something ridiculously low like that. So between the way his physical appearance looks and his quiet demeanor and the perceived weak move that he did by joining the team that took him out of the playoffs, I don't think he's really defending himself like in anger. It's just that's how people are looking at him. He's not the little choir boy anymore because people are trying to villainize him for what he's done, you know, similar to what, you know, LeBron James and what happened to him. I mean, if he wants to defend himself, if he wants to speak up, go for it. I have no problem with it. People are hating on him for all the wrong reasons.
My thing is I don't know if it really helped him. I don't think it really did any. I think it was just, like I said, sometimes the media and fans need to be just told to shut up sometimes. And I think this was just KD getting fed up and just basically coming to his own defense. Because, honestly, nobody else has come to his defense. So he had to come out and actually say something. And I think, I don't think it really helped his cause nor hurt it. I think people are still going to feel the same way that they felt about his decision since he made it. So, I mean, he really could have kept it to himself, but, hey, if he wants to get it off his chest, by all means.
The only person that's ever come to Katie's defense is his mom, and I think moms need to stay out of sports world because they get chewed up and spit out. And then back to what you said about the fans, all these fans just want to get on YouTube for burning a jersey or saying something so provocative.
That's a new thing
so
now.
They're idiots. Like, you really cared about all 82 games and every shot that he took. Come on now. Just buy the jersey, support your team, shut up no matter who's there.
But I've already told you basketball is weird. They move stars like it's nothing. It's hard to say that.
But that's the thing. Accept that culture. You got to. Like, your favorite player is not going to be there all 20 years like Kobe or Michael or Tim Duncan. Like, that is a way of the past or rare as hell. So,
definitely,
you know, fall in love with these guys, but treat them like a high school girlfriend knowing they're not going to be there your freshman year in college, and you're going to run through everything you possibly can.
Yeah, I get it. I really do. But it's hard to say you can't fall in love with LeBron James. Like, come on now. It's hard to. It's easier said than done. That's like saying you getting Nikki and I'm gonna just hit it and quit it. Nah, you lying.
We're not talking about LeBron today.
So. We go on, okay, so the next one. My scans have been reports that finally Josh Norman will be shadowing the other team's best receiver, who ironically seems to be, it is Odell Beckham Jr., his biggest rival this Sunday. What took the scans so long to finally make this decision?
So reports, who made these reports? Was it Roger Goodell on NFL.com so they can get the buzz for this game up after last year's little fiasco?
Most likely.
If he guards him, he guards him. If he doesn't, he doesn't. We all want to see the matchup, but if the coaches want to put it out there like that, they're going to. To me, it's just another one of NFL's storylines or Goodell's little plots to drive it up, and I just hope the refs officiate it better than they did last year because that was a disaster.
And I don't want to see what I saw last year. And for real, to me, I want to know what took so long because this is the worst time, honestly, to me, for us to pick for him to go shadow a receiver. The Giants are loaded at receiver. They could get it to Cruz.
Exactly.
They could get it to Sterling Shepard. They could get it to OBJ. They could get it to the tight end. They could get it to anybody. And Eli is not going to shy away from those side of the field. We know Eli is not scared to throw an interception. This is the worst time
Eli
to do
Manning.
It. You wait until
is having
now when you
the best. The Eli Manning is having
the
best first two games of his career right now. He's completing,
he
I think,
right
77%.
I've already accepted that Eli's going to torture us per usual. But I'm just not understanding the mindset of the coaching staff to wait until now to move to have him shadow a guy when he went against two super elite receivers in the first 2 weeks. We know Antonio Brown's better than him, but you can make the case of Dez Bryant if you want to. So I'm lost on as why to start now, but I guess better late than never in this situation. Last one, we got two rookies going out there starting this week. We've already talked about Bursette with the Patriots starting tonight. And we also got Cody Kessler starting in Cleveland. Who do you think has the better start this week?
Brissett, 100 times over. I mean, Cody Kessler, good luck, man. If you play daily fantasy, play the Dolphins. It's in Miami. You have Isaiah Crowell, who has overshined his dog turd potential. You got Corey Coleman, who, that's so Cleveland, just broke his hand in practice. He's throwing to Terrell Pryor. Terrell Pryor is probably going to end up being a quarterback for that team if the injuries keep coming up. Brissett has a much better scenario. I don't care the matchup. I'm sorry, Cody, but, man, you've got a bad beat.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never choose a Cleveland Brown player to ever have a better game than any kind of New England Patriot. So I'm going to go with Brissett tonight as well. He's got the best coach. He's got the best team. He's got the best. I mean, they're both going up against two tough defenses, but, I mean, I'm going with the Patriots all the way. Like I said, I can't see myself picking a Cleveland Brown for anything.
He's got Gronk. Gronk's coming back this week, too.
Gronk's playing tonight?
Yeah, I just got an alert about an hour ago that he's running around the locker room screaming at all his teammates saying he's playing tonight. So, I mean, if he's saying he's playing,
yeah.
I mean, so, hey, let's see.
Yeah, we definitely will see. So, and that's big for leading into our next topic, fantasy. You know, we got, of course, every week we got the fantasy going down, and it starts tonight. Who are some of your sleepers for this week?
Well, I mean, I got some guys I love. I don't know if there's guys that are sleepers. I hate to say it, but you kind of have to start Terrell Pryor if you're hurt for wide receivers. But, you know, there's so many injuries over the last week. I mean, so many running backs that are just depleted. There's games that I won't even touch, like the Vikings and the Panthers game. I don't want anything to do with Matt Asiata, Jerick McKinnon, Fozzie Whitaker, Cameron Sardis Payne. Like, don't let me touch any of them. And then the Seattle, you know, 49ers game, Thomas Rawls and Christian Michael are splitting carries. Rawls is supposed to be back, but he's looked like trash, where Christian Michael's getting like five a touch. You know, Carlos Hyde's got to go against that tough defense. It's really a crapshoot when it comes to running backs this week. So, I mean, I'm sticking with, you know, Melvin Gordon in a favorable matchup. I think Devonta Freeman's got a favorable matchup, even though Tevin Coleman's taking carries. I mean, ask a physician. I'll tell you a guy. But it's hurting right now with all the injuries, you know, throughout the first week.
Everybody's going through it. I mean, I'm suffering with Doug Martin going down. It was a hard week for injuries this past week. Definitely a hard week for injuries in general, but like I said, specifically at the running back position. As far as a sleeper, just a random sleeper that I have, I like Giovanni Bernard, just as if you're talking about flex positions.
You are crazy.
I like Giovanni Bernard just for the fact that it's no fly zone. You got A.J. Green, that secondary you're going to want nothing to deal with. And Andy Dalton's not going to have a lot of time back there. He's got to get the ball
Andy
out of his hands quick, and he's got to get it to somebody. Exactly, which is even more reason that he's not going to want to hold on to the ball but for so long. And Giovanni Bernard just came out of a game with 9 catches, 100 yards. Giovanni is a beast in PPR league. His only value is in PPR league. So, honestly, I wouldn't be too scared to start Giovanni Bernard this week. I really feel like he's going to be a big part of that offense because they're not going to be able to do anything else. Another person I like this week, and really you've had to like him since Keenan Allen went down, is Travis Benjamin. Travis Benjamin, I think you can also go back to one of our archive shows of me saying that he was one of my sleepers for this year. I like Travis Benjamin going from Cleveland, who came off a very good year in Cleveland last year, going into a very pass-heavy offense in San Diego with a way better cornerback situation. And now he walks into a situation where Keenan Allen is hurt. And really, honestly, I'm not saying that I was hoping anybody gets hurt, but Keenan Allen is one of those guys that I have on my mind to stay away from because of a potential injury risk, which is why I did draft.
What happened
Travis
to him last year was a fluke. That was a fluke. You couldn't predict that. The best thing for Travis Benjamin is playing the Colts. I think the Colts have 5 cornerbacks on it. Like, in their injury report right now, like, their secondary is so beat up. So anyone in that Chargers matchup is a good one to have. Because that's one of the games, like, I only focus on 3 or 4 games, the juicy ones, and that's a juicy one. Tight end, Hunter Henry, the rookie, the first rounder for the Chargers. He might get some run because it came out today that Anthony Gates might not play. So anyone that can score any kind of points for San Diego for cheap is who I want. Melvin Gordon. He's going to be a stud. Travis Benjamin, you kind of got to have him, but everyone's going to have because of blow-up week last week. Hunter Henry is going to be sleepy. I mean, people aren't going to even know who he is because he's a rookie. He has yet to even get any kind of run. And, you know, everyone looks for Antonio Gates, but that game is just juicy. Philip Dorsett, you know, there's no Dante Moncrief, so Philip Dorsett's out there as the number 2. You know, it's going to be a game that I think there's going to be a lot of points scored. So, I mean, there's a couple of juicy matchups out there, but there's some games I want nothing to do with.
Well, another one that I think that if you want to start it, and this is for the quarterback position, if you're talking about somebody starting, I would start Jameis definitely. I mean, not that you already probably don't, but Jameis is a person, is a quarterback that I love this week going at home against the Rams, and Jameis and company, I'm pretty sure they're upset about the way they finished out last week's game, almost completing the comeback. They have a terrible Rams team coming in. I understand the Rams defense is good, but that Rams team is only they're only that as good as we saw last week. It really wasn't that good, but it was good enough to win. We only see that type of Rams team against certain teams, and it's really teams in the NFC West. We know they give the Seahawks trouble every time they play. We know they give the Cardinals trouble. But really, when you get the Rams out of their own spot, you get them on the road, and they're going up against a very good offense out there. I know Doug Martin went down, but that's an explosive offense in Tampa Bay that they'll be going up against. I like Jameis Winston to really tear it up out there and really have a breakout type of game. Who was another
I'm glad you said something about Jameis, because it's not about that, because if you have Mike Evans in fantasy football, you have to be frothing at the mouth because you have a guy like Winston who will go out there and just sling it. Mike Evans last week got 17 targets. Now, he only caught, I think, 5 or 6 balls. He had 100 and a touchdown. But that just goes to show you how good Patrick Peterson can be when he really does focus. But, you know, Jameis Winston is a gunslinger. You're going to take the good with the bad. He's going to have highs. He's going to have lows. But Mike Evans is a dude that's a huge target. And we all know Jameis likes to go to the huge target. So I'm all in on Mike Evans this week. I think Jameis Winston's a good pick. But my sleeper quarterback this week is from the same draft class and the guy that went right behind him, Marcus Mariota. I mean, that team has been a tough out this entire time. And, you know, he's averaged, you know, 250, 2 touchdowns, and, you know, and whatnot. Granted, he had the tough week. You know, their matchup this week against the Raiders is beyond juicy. I think the Raiders have given up 500 yards of offense in 2 straight weeks. You know, they're banged up on the front. No Alden Smith, no Mario Edwards. So I think DeMarc Murray's a good play. But Marcus Mariota is going to be super cheap and daily.
I was definitely going to mention DeMarco Murray to go along with that for the reason that I think the Raiders have given up about the second most rushing yards in the league so far. So I would definitely pick both DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. Honestly, aren't too bad guys to start in general. Derrick Henry, if you need a flex option, an emergency flex option, definitely. I don't think Derrick Henry would be a bad person to throw out there. I think I expect to see Tennessee really have a good day offensively out there. Both offenses, really. I think that'll be a high scoring game. I like both team's offensive players in that game.
Next one I like is Marvin Jones. I mean, people are sleeping on Marvin Jones. Like, he was always overlooked because of AJ Green. But Golden Tate is completely replaced as the number one. Marvin Jones, I think, is the third most targeted receiver in football through 2 weeks. And we saw what Stephon Diggs and brand new Sam Bradford could do to the Packers secondary. Packers don't have Sam Shields. And their secondary is getting just diced to pieces. And Matthew Stafford and the Lions are running this no-huddle, high-paced offense. And Marvin Jones is literally just getting force-fed the ball a la Megatron. He's not as talented, but you can't hate a guy that's getting that many opportunities. Plus, there's no Amir Abdullah. Theo Riddick isn't a guy that really pounds the rock to reactivate the rookie Dwayne Washington. Marvin Jones has been one of my guys all year long. He's still super cheap. I don't know if I would touch the Packers in that game because you're going to have to overpay, but you've got to look at that.
Right. Well, I'm going to go with a stick in the wide receiver class, and I'm going to stick with a possible sleeper. And you may call me a homer, but I'm going to go with Jameis
I like what you're
going to
say, actually. I already knew you were going to say that. I already liked it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jameson Crowder. Jameson Crowder has under the radar, has really been our most tied for the most targets on our team, I believe, or not second in targets behind Jordan Reed. And he catches almost everything that's thrown to him if Kirk Cousins can never put the ball on him enough, he gets the ball put on, and he makes the catch. And one thing about Redskins Giants game, there's going to be scoring involved. This will be the game that I'm not saying I expect Kirk Cousins to look like the Kirk Cousins we saw in the last seven games last year, but if there's an opportunity for him to get out of the little slump that he's in, I think it'll be happening this week. The Giants' front line does worry me, but as far as getting moving the ball upfield and getting the opportunities offensively to put points on the board, I expect there to be a lot of that going on between both teams. But Jamison Crowder is one that I really like. He gets the ball thrown to him a lot more than I think a lot of us thought going into the season, including myself, expected going into the season. But I've always liked Jamison Crowder, and he's good at run after the catch as well. So he's one that I would try to steal, especially for cheap in a daily fantasy league. He's definitely going to be there for cheap.
He should have had a red zone touchdown. He had a couple targets. They should have had a red zone touchdown last week, but your boy Captain Kirk kind
of. Of course.
We all know what happened in that game.
Yeah, I don't even. I'm trying to still get over that right now. You're bringing up bad memories
that I'm trying to stay away from.
We're
not going to do the ex-girlfriend thing and bring up, you know, some shit from the trap path we'd be tripping on.
I've told myself I'm going to be good today.
Last one I want to talk about is a tight end that people always forget about, but it's Dennis Pitta. Dennis Pitta literally is like Iron Man because he's made out of nuts and bolts with all the things he's had with his hips and knees. But he is Flacco's guy. Like, and we had this argument last week about the Ravens and all this and all that. But Dennis Pitta, I think, is the second most targeted tight end in all of football. And, I mean, it's Flacco's blanket, his binky, his favorite drink, his favorite show. He is just – he's getting it to Pitta. And before Pitta ever got hurt and while he was healthy, he was very valid in fantasy. He's going to be super cheap. And the Jacksonville Jaguars are just, like, oozing points on the defensive end. We saw what San Diego did to him last week. That was embarrassing.
Yeah, it was. But and I'm going to match you one up one with the tight end before we get out of here. And I'm going to go Julius Thomas at home against Baltimore. I expect the Jaguars offense to get back on point. Julian Thomas tends to be a good been getting a lot of targets from Blake Bortles the first couple of weeks. I know that they didn't their offense completely stunk last week, but Baltimore will give them the opportunity to put points up on them this week. We saw what Cleveland was able to do last week, and Baltimore will. Joe Flacco.
Cleveland did it all in one quarter, didn't score after that.
Yeah, but Joe Flacco, that's what I was about to get to. He will give them opportunities. At home, Jacksonville, Joe Flacco will give them opportunities to score. And, you know, they're just a better – they're a different team at home. Their offense seems way more organized, way more gelled when it's at home. And Julius Thomas is a big – focal point of that offense. If really, if he's not having a good game, that offense is at a stalemate.
That's a sign of a young team.
I mean, yeah, it is. It definitely is. But for a young quarterback, one of your best friends is a tight end. And what more of a big target could you need than Julius Thomas? I'm looking for him. And he's big on big plays. He's one of the few tight ends in this league that has big play abilities when he catches the ball. So he's very good for even just run after the catch, not just in a PPR. So we got a minute left before we get out of here. Anything you want to say before we get out? I know your nose went down last week and your Niners. So, I mean, you're in the same boat as me. We're both holding out hope except for my Cornhuskers, who are now ranked number 20.
At least, like I said, the Niners got a dub or a crooked number in the win call.
You want to
go back to that?
I
think there's a serious chance that they could actually make the game tough for Seattle.
I'm sure they will. That's the division. That's the NFC West. That's the grittiness of the NFC West, just like I expect us to make it tough on the Giants in New York. So, you know, we're going to all see how it unfolds. We'll be back to talk about it all on Tuesday. Hope y'all check in with us. Have a safe weekend. We out of here.
Peace.